Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com, and I hope you'll check it out when you get a chance. And don't forget to check out our newsletter, which you can subscribe to, which is free. It comes by on Sunday by email every week. Get you ready for the week ahead. We're now in our 7th year of the newsletter, and we also have a blog. And we're coming up on an anniversary for the blog. It's been out this summer. Will be our first anniversary, and so I hope you'll check that out. You can subscribe to it, or you can come and get it. Either way you want. We make it available to you, as well as all the other things that we've been doing for you since 1997. On the website's been up there to for just for you, and it's all free, all available to you to help you have the maximum opportunity to be successful. Dr. Scott Caywood is with us, ladies and gentlemen, and I told you that Rita Bailey might be with us earlier. She's a co-author, but it looks like she's not going to make it today. We hope she'll make it next time. Destination Profit is the name of the book that she and Scott have co-authored, and it's an important one, and we're going to talk about it. Scott, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Delighted to be here.
It's good to have you here. I don't know if you heard what my little opening remarks when before you got here, but I was talking about growing up on a farm, Scott, and knowing how much we fed the animals on our farm because I was the one who carried the feed. And I knew we fed our animals a lot, and we kept them healthy during the winter. We were driving by my neighbor's house one time, and he was carrying a little bitty bucket of feed to his cattle. And I asked my dad, why could he feed such a small amount to his cows? And we were feeding ours so much. He said, son, you can't starve a profit out of your cows.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never forgotten that, and I think that's good advice for employers to say to themselves, you can't starve a profit out of your people. What do you think?
I couldn't agree more. It's one of those interesting parts about even at the book. The name is Destination Profit, but the subheading, you know, is creating people profit opportunities. We all need to make money in business, but I think your thinking is absolutely right on in that you really do need to do what's right for your people in order for them to do what's right by the customer. You know, I've never met an organization where their employee experience, it never does exceed the customer experience. So if you really do want your customer service and your customer levels to be as high as they want, you really do have to start with a focus on your people. They truly are going to be the ones that deliver for you.
But how do we build that kind of a culture in our organizations? You guys have studied, you and Rita have studied companies who've done a good job of this. Give us some best practices.
Well, you know, the nice thing about this is there's no one right way to do it. When we looked at companies that make, like, for example, the Fortune 100 Best Places to Work list, we were also very interested in the companies that not only were great places to work, but also made money so that they could do the things they wanted to do, be it give employees better packages, do more things for the communities, give more back to the communities where they reside. We were looking at all of that in combination. And so the things that we found about the nation's best workplaces that also were growing the fastest and making the most money, there's two points about it. First, they've all done it differently. You know, FedEx has done it differently than, you know, Wegmans grocery store. And that's the beauty of this. It doesn't have to be one right way to do this. There are, however, some things that are at the base of these organizations. Even regardless of the size, and I work with a company called Modern Things that selects the best places to work in the U.S. states. So the nice thing about that is we get to look at small organizations from 25 people all the way up to the very most largest organizations. And the thing that we continuously find that are in the organizations that are the best places to work and the ones making the most money, they've got leadership that's perceived as credible and capable. They've got communication practices that are very transparent, so there's not a lot of secrets in these companies. People are telling it like it is. You know, supervisors are giving feedback that's real, it's timely. The third variable we look at is the respect that employees feel you give them. And that's for the whole person now, not just the employee mm-hmm. side, but the whole person.
Including their family and their own hopes and dreams of success.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's such a myth to look at an employee and see only an employee. There's a whole person sitting there with ideas and beliefs and dreams, and when you can tap into that, you really are able to leverage and get the top talent out of that individual. And the last competency we look for is the alignment. It looks at the ability for an individual to contribute and the ability for the organization to collaborate and get things done. And when you get those four basic competencies in place, then you add your own kind of special and unique culture, you tend to perform really well as an organization, both from a people and a business perspective.
You know, Scott, I have worked, before I started my own company, I was a good employee for 23 years, an employee, an executive, a manager, different roles, salesperson. And I have worked places where, in all of those places, there were people higher in the organizational chart than me, who there were times when I knew they were making pivotal decisions for the company. And there were some times when I thought, you know what? Whatever they decide is going to be good for all of us. And then there were times when I thought, you know what? I don't know what they're up to, but it's not good. It's not going to be good for me. And right. and that had an attitude. That had an effect on my attitude as I went about my business.
You know, it's an absolutely brilliant point. And, you know, the downside of this, if you think about it, the more senior you get in an organization, the more your focus becomes external. So you don't pay attention to what's happening internal.
Right.
And the lower you are, if you will, the lower ranking in the part of the organization, really your whole focus is internal. So the goal is to open up the communication so that we get both of those constituents, the more the entry level as well as the senior team, really does understand what's going on both inside and outside the organization. Most senior leaders, unfortunately, have no clue what it's like to really work inside their organization. And that's a really big missed opportunity in terms of
understanding. The farther away they get from the customer, meaning they're doing more strategic decisions and less actually, you know, touching the customer face-to-face with the customer, the farther away they get from the employees who actually touch customers, the more they get into a realm where they focus a lot more on the competition than they do anything else. And I think that's one of the problems that we've got in our marketplace these days. What do you think, Scott?
I couldn't agree more.
Big companies especially.
Well, you know, stakeholder value has just, I mean, I look at that and just, you know, just almost cringe because, I mean, who in the world really ever wants to get up and increase stakeholder value? It's just never, it's one of those dynamics that has put a real vicious cycle in organizations today.
Right.
And
right.
It really does have to get broken. And you look at some of the nation's best workplaces and the ones that are most profitable, they're not worrying so much about their competition. They're worrying about what's doing right by their people and their customers. And that's where the money is.
And that's what we're going to continue to talk about right after these messages. I've got a couple of questions to ask Scott right after these messages. Dr. Scott K. Wood is the co-author of Destination Profit. And he and I will be right back after these messages. It's 20 after. Stay with us. I love that song, Atlanta Rhythm Section, ladies and gentlemen. That's got to be our theme song, right, ladies and gentlemen? That's us. Do it or die. We're gonna make this small business work, or we're gonna bust, right? That's the way I feel sometimes, and have felt many times in the past. And I know you feel the same way. Dr. Scott K. Wood is our guest. He's the co-author of Destination Profit. We're talking about what they call people equal profits. And that's a very interesting thought, and it's not just a nice thing to say, Scott. It's actually a best practice, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And the notion there is, you know, we all need to make money, but we know some things that in order to make money need to be in place, and that's really what your people experience for the 8 or 10 hours a day they're with you at work.
See, this is one of the reasons why I think small business owners are going to dominate the 21st century. We already are emerging. I started calling the 21st century the century of the entrepreneur in 1997. And more and more every day things happen to make me believe that. And I believe that in this century small businesses will dominate because we are close to our employees. We are close to our customers, and I believe that the more people are treated like they're some kind of something to be manipulated, the more they're going to gravitate to small businesses, not only as customers, but also as employees.
Well, you can, and that would be backed up by some good research, simply because many people have just, I mean, you look at 9/11 and that, what happened to it after that. Folks came in and said, I'm not going to continue to go through this much hassle just to get a paycheck and have a job where I'm stressed out and go home stressed out, stressed out my family. So I think that the small businesses have been a great answer. And we've seen lots of legacy organizations have employees that are defecting to either do their own thing and start their own business. Women in particular have said, I've had enough. I'm going to do my own thing here. And we've seen a great span of new businesses, small businesses come up. And, the nice thing is that the economy we're in today, it requires that you be as agile as absolutely possible. You're competing against companies now in different countries where you never had to do it before. And really, the small businesses, I believe, are the ones that are poised for the most growth. And, we see a lot of the large legacy organizations trying to decentralize so they can operate more nimbly as smaller organizations.
Well, they are, and a lot of those people you mentioned after 9/11, especially the folks in Lower Manhattan, they may still be working for those big companies, but a lot of them stayed at home after when they said, your office is ready. They said, I'm already in my office. Send it to me on my laptop.
Absolutely. It did change the way I think in which we view the world. It also, I think, put a really reality check for many folks in saying, is what I'm doing meaningful? I mean, people oftentimes ask me, what is that one kind of secret? And I said, look, it's got to have some meaning behind it, whether it's the workplace you provide, the customers you serve, the people I work with. I got to have some meaning somewhere in my work and what I'm doing. We all want that, regardless.
But how do we, as an employer, how do I convert what you just said into action? What do I make that look like?
I think, when folks come in an organization, they come in for some very specialized reasons. When we look at issues of retention in the workplace, one thing that's completely omitted is that the basics have to be in place for me to stay in your organization. The things such as, I'm communicated with, I'm told the full information, I'm disclosed, from leadership what's really going on.
When decisions are being made about a product, a strategy, where the company's going to go, when to open, when to close, those kinds of things, as an employee, I don't feel like that I have to take whatever is given, that at least they talk to me about the decision when they're making it.
Yes. People do tend to support those things they're creating on. One of the companies in the book is a nonprofit organization called East Alabama Medical Center. And one of the reasons why we really wanted to study them is because they're so advanced in terms of healthcare, but also, I would argue, much of corporate America. In fact, when they have a major change in an organization, they always pick out, they've got this list of like 40 influencers in their hospital. And they're not by title or by rank, but they're people who they know get things done for them. Mm-hmm. They always pull them out and say, hey, we're thinking about doing this. What do you think about that? And it's just a brilliant way to ask their folks, well in advance of a decision, give us some of your expertise and insight because you know what the impact will be if we make this choice.
Those,
I have to tell you, that has just been an amazing result for them.
Those four words that you just used are maybe the most powerful four words in management, in the marketplace, and that is, what do you think?
Couldn't agree more.
If we can ask our employees, what do you think, more often, I think the profits will come and play in our backyard.
And I'm a consultant, so I go into companies and try to provide answers, and I always consistently find the answers are already inside the organization. We may be able to help you get them to come up, but the stuff that typically you need, the answers are already somewhere in your organization. My question for you is, are you going to be smart enough to open up the avenue to find the answer that's already inside your company? Because it's there. It's typically there.
Well, see, that's another way you find out if you've hired the right people. If you ask your people what do they think and they don't give you good answers, then you don't have the right people.
Agreed.
And you need to set about getting the right people. So that's a good way to not only involve your employees, but it's also a good way to find out if you get the right folks.
Absolutely agree. And I do believe people need to be held accountable for the promises and commitments mm-hmm. they make in an organization.
Absolutely. And Scott, I have to stop you. Can you give us your website, please?
Yeah, you can go to www.destinationprofit.com.
And that's the book. It's available wherever books are sold, right?
Correct.
Scott K. Wood and Rita Bailey are the authors of that. Scott, thank you for being here today. Will you come back another day and bring Rita with you next time?
Jim, it'll be a pleasure to join you anytime.
Thank you. Scott K. Wood, ladies and gentlemen, he'll be back. I will be too with Leslie Kossoff. She's in London right after these messages. Stay with us.
Come, I know it.
Since I began broadcasting the show in 1997, part of my contract with you...
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.